This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have teams that is 70 people ready to go, and there's no way we can get into Libya. You know, there's very few airlines that fly into the country, and where we need to go is quite far from where the planes fly.
That's Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman from the Gift of the Givers aid group on the challenges of getting volunteers and supplies into flood-stricken areas in Libya. Details coming up. Also, the annual United Nations General Assembly meeting is getting underway in New York, and the government of the Republic of Congo denies rumors of a military coup. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. World leaders are gathering in New York City for the 78th session of the United Nations General Assembly, which begins today. VOA reporter Peter Cloete is there at the United Nations, and we have him on the line to tell us about this annual gathering. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Peter.
Thank you very much. Yes.
So, what is the scene where you are, Peter, as world leaders arrive in New York and the city becomes congested?
Well, you just mentioned it, Yehiye, the city is congested, especially around the UN building here in Manhattan. There were several roadblocks. Even one of the tunnels was blocked to allow some of these heads of state to easy access to travel. And there are motorcades all over the place. Some residents of New York, especially those who ply their trade, those who work around the UN, usually this is not a pleasant thing for them. Some of them tell me that during this time, especially the taxi and the Uber drivers, they find it difficult because there's traffic all over town. They don't make the amount of money that they used to make routinely during this period, although they can only get to about two or three blocks near the UN due to security concerns. So those are the issues that people are dealing with. But a lot of these leaders have arrived and they are ready to begin the high-level debate, which effectively begins tomorrow, Tuesday. Yeah.
So we'll be talking about a lot of topics in the coming days. But for now, Peter, tell us about the Sustainable Development Goals Summit taking place just ahead of the General Assembly opening.
Indeed, the two-day Sustainable Development Goals Summit, which began today, ends tomorrow. It was organized by the UN General Assembly President, and the summit will aim to mark the have the deadline set for achieving the 2030 agenda and the Sustainable Development Goals. It will be the centerpiece of the high-level week of the General Assembly, and it will respond to the impact of multiple and interlocking crises facing the world. It is expected to reignite a sense of hope, optimism, and enthusiasm for the 2030 agenda. Some countries have not been able to meet the threshold at this point, at this half point, and that is why this summit, observers tell me, it's important for them to encourage these political leaders to, you know, to demonstrate more commitment, to put more effort into achieving these halfway targets in order for the world to come to an equilibrium based on the agenda of the Sustainable Development Goals in 2030. So that is what is going on here in New York. And this summit marks a new phase of what experts tell me is the accelerated progress towards the Sustainable Development Goal with high-level political guidance on transformative and accelerated actions ahead of the 2030 target ahead.
And Peter, finally, I'm sure you'll be talking to some of the African leaders attending the summit in the coming days. What are the major issues African leaders are likely to focus on?
Well, thank you very much, Hey. As we've made, you know, very committed efforts to getting them to speak with us. But two key major things on this UN General Assembly agenda are, one, the climate crisis and the impact it's having on these African countries, and the ongoing war in Ukraine, which is also having a devastating effect on the economies in the in several African countries. As you know, a lot of African countries say they bear the brunt of climate change and crisis, and have been calling on wealthier Western nations to help finance efforts to cushion the effect of climate change. They often argue that the wealthier nations contribute significantly more to conditions that expedite, accelerate climate change. So let's see how things will go regarding the debate and the resolutions or outcome of the debate on steps and commitment by these countries towards combating climate change. And of course, the war in Ukraine, you've heard a lot of these African countries talking about its impact it's having on the economies. High inflation, prices of goods and services are going through the roof. Public sector workers, private sector workers are unhappy about the economic conditions because of these economic challenges that they are facing. So let's see what outcomes these leaders will come up with and the commitment to try to resolve or come up with solutions to help some of these countries to surmount these challenges they face in their respective countries.
VOA's Peter Cloete reporting from the United Nations headquarters in New York. Thank you for your input, Peter.
Thank you very much for having me.
United Nations agencies warned today that Libya's flood-stricken city of Derna, where thousands were killed a week ago, faces a threat of the disease outbreaks that could bring a second devastating crisis. The massive flash floods that struck Libya on September 10th left over 30,000 residents of Derna traumatized, homeless, and in need of clean water, food, and basic supplies. Rapidly rising waters burst two upstream dams, sending a late-night wave crashing through the center of the coastal city and sweeping entire residential blocks into the Mediterranean. Libyan authorities, local agencies, and the World Health Organization expressed concern about the risk of disease outbreak, particularly from contaminated water and the lack of sanitation. The UN support mission in Libya said it has sent 9 teams in the North African nation to deliver aid and support those affected by the floods. Other UN agencies have been working in and around Derna for the past few days to help survivors. Last week, the UN appealed for more than $71 million for the emergency response in Libya. Search and rescue experts from South Africa's biggest aid organization are hoping they will be able to reach the flood-ravaged Libyan city of Derna. Heavy rains caused dams to burst about a week ago with floodwaters killing thousands of people, and thousands more remain missing. Meanwhile, as Darren Taylor reports, South Africa is facing flooding of its own.
Gift of the Givers founder, Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman, says Libyan authorities contacted him for help hours after the disaster struck.
They needed search and rescue teams and specialized equipment. They needed aquatic teams. They needed medical teams. They needed boats. We've got a life locator to see where people are alive. We even got dog handlers and canines. We had teams ready, 70 people ready to go. And there's no way we can get into Libya. You know, there's very few airlines that fly into the country. And where we need to go is quite far from where the planes fly.
Dr. Suleiman tried to charter aircraft to transport his experts to the city of Tobruk, about 170 kilometers southwest of the hardest-hit city, Derna. Thousands of people have died there, and more than 10,000 remain missing since the floods a week ago. He says all but one company refused to travel to conflict-ridden Libya, where various armed groups control much of the country and hostage-taking is common.
One company came at a cost of 16 million rand. So that just didn't work. The alternative was to provide them supplies which they need, and that's what we're busy with right now. We're busy procuring medicines inside Dubai for the companies that we worked for in the past, and we're busy providing supplies in South Africa. The Libyan government has then said it will send a plane to fetch these supplies from us in South Africa, and we send more than one plane for us to support them.
Suleiman remains hopeful his experts will get into Libya this week. Aid workers are also helping on South Africa's eastern and western Cape coastlines. High seas, driven by gale force winds, have battered towns and cities there since Friday, causing millions of dollars of damage and leaving many people homeless. National Sea Rescue Institute spokesperson Craig Lambanon says there are several people missing.
Sadly, we have learned there has been a person deceased related to the storm surges that we experienced yesterday. A 93-year-old female has sadly passed away after being struck by waves, and we're noticing that we're having a lot of erosion, structural damage to coastline structures. So our appeal to the public is at the moment, be cautious, stay away, especially during high tide.
Social media footage shows cars being swept from residential areas and sucked out to sea, and coastal buildings that have stood for generations crumbling into the heaving ocean. Lambanon says hurricane force winds, along with an unusually high spring tide, combined to create what he calls a perfect storm.
The spring tide, which peaked on Friday evening, will last into the new week. So you're probably looking at Tuesday, Wednesday, even maybe Thursday. Because of the storms that we've been experiencing, pretty unusual, because the storms were from one end of South Africa all the way around the coast to the other end of South Africa.
South African weather experts say abnormally high spring tides and storms are becoming increasingly common, and they link this to the effects of climate change. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. The government of the Republic of Congo yesterday denied the rumors of a military coup while President Denis Sassou Nguesso is attending the United Nations General Assembly this week in New York. Social media posts alleged the military was taking over. Thierry Mongala, the Congo-Brazzaville Minister of Information, tweeted yesterday that it was fake news. Nguesso became president in a coup in 1979, but lost in the country's first multi-party election in 1992. He returned to the presidency in 1997 after a period of civil conflict. The rumors and denials of a coup comes less than 3 weeks after the military in Gabon ousted President Ali Bongo Ondimba, hours after he was declared winner of national elections. Tens of thousands of children in Gabon who are returning to school will not be paying enrollment fees for the first time after the military junta declared education would be free. However, many families say the high cost of living still makes it difficult to send children to school. Mokedwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
Gabon's military junta said tens of thousands of school children returned to school on Monday after a summer vacation 2 weeks later than originally planned. The military seized power from President Ali Bongo Ondimba shortly after he was proclaimed the winner of August 26 elections and pushed back the opening of school. The ruling junta, led by acting president General Brice Oligui Nguema, last week declared school would be free. 16-year-old Nga Herodia is in the first year of the sixth form at the Immaculate Conception Institute in the capital Libreville. She says all the school children were excited about catching up with friends and teachers after a very long vacation. Nga told state television she and her peers spent the first several hours in school talking about the military takeover. Emmanuel V is a member of Environment Gabon, a coalition of non-profit environmental protection groups. He says poverty and rising prices are making it difficult for parents to send children to school. He spoke to VOA via a messaging app from Bitam, a town on Gabon's northern border with Cameroon.
Nous sommes contraints de faire appel à votre autorité.
He says civil society activists want the new military leadership to improve living standards of all citizens and bridge the huge gap between the rich and the poor. He says poverty is accentuated by the lack of drinkable water and electricity in the majority of the country's villages. Mve said there has been an unprecedented rise in food prices since Russia's war in Ukraine started last year. He said commodities from Ukraine and Russia, such as wheat, maize and fertilizer, have risen nearly 50% in price, making it difficult for parents to provide food and education to their children. Gabon's military leaders say free education will bridge the gap between the rich and the poor that has existed since Gabon got its independence in 1960. Camilla Tutume Leclerc is Minister of National Education.
C'est pourquoi plaçons l'année scolaire 2023-2024.
She says the school year that began on Monday is under the theme of patriotism to give General Nguema enough time to carry out reforms to improve education and living conditions of all civilians. She says Nguema decided enrollment should be free because he wants all children to have access. The ousted president Ali Bongo and his father Omar Bongo Ondimba ruled the Central African state for more than 55 years. Critics say they left behind a failing national education system. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Following the signing of a new agreement with diamond giant De Beers, Botswana's government says it will start selling some of the precious stones to its citizens. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Mokondisi Dube has the details.
Botswana will get more diamonds from De Beers under a 10-year deal signed in June. The country will receive 30% of rough diamonds this year, up from 25%, with the allocation rising to 50% in the next 10 years. State entity Okavango Diamond Company sells the diamonds on behalf of the government. Addressing citizen-owned diamond companies Monday, OTC's managing director Mitla Masire said allocations will be set for Botswana citizens since they could not compete with much larger international buyers in auctions.
We have looked at the sizes of the lots, we have looked at the range of goods, and we have looked at the competitive pricing that were challenging when you were put in the same room as international players for that. This is what we have done, and we believe that with this, the only challenge now is the cook, because the ingredients are now in place. This is the only risk level whether we can cook this product.
He says the change is aimed at including citizens in the lucrative industry.
We need to see you empowered, and we want to see you create employment. If we can achieve this, we will be very happy.
Kumi Kamole, who runs a diamond company, welcomed the move to sell the diamonds to citizens, but wants the gems to be sold through contracts as opposed to auctions.
I mean, is it still bidding? It's still on a bidding platform. And if the answer to that question is yes, then it doesn't really address what we were having a problem with last year. For now, which are we bidding against each other as opposed to internationals and moneyed up?
OTC's Masire says the diamonds will continue being sold through auctions in an effort to maintain a health balance sheet. Botswana, the world's second largest producer of diamonds, conducts 10 auctions each year to sell the stones. For VOA, this is Mqondisi Dube in Habroni, Botswana.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Malawi has faced chronic food insecurity for years, but a 110% increase in maize prices from the previous year have made the situation worse. Chimwimwi Padata has this report from the capital, Lilongwe.
Malawi is facing natural and man-made challenges that are causing food insecurity. In February, the country was hit by Cyclone Freddy, which washed away thousands of hectares of crops in the south. The price of maize, a staple crop, has risen 110% compared to the previous year, according to an August report by the Famine Early Warning Systems Network, that has left many families scrambling to pay for essential food items, says Davison Kugu, a maize trader.
Things are not good this year. Prices of maize have gone up, and it is hard for most people to purchase. A 50-kilogram bag of maize is now selling at $43, which is an equivalent of 47,000 kwacha. This is too high for families to afford.
A recent maize market report by the International Food Policy Research Institute, or IFRI, shows that prices of maize in Malawi are among the highest in Africa's southern countries. Jan Dushoslav, an IFPRI research fellow based in Malawi, said the situation is partially caused by challenges to the implementation of the Affordable Inputs Program, a government program that allows farmers to purchase farm inputs at a subsidized cost.
Our official production estimates show that there should be just about enough maize in the country. Chances are that given how high prices are going, that there is less. High prices and the scarcity of fuel probably did not help much either recently. It's expensive to move food around. There's big uncertainty about what will happen with the input subsidy program going into the next harvest, next growing season.
Kondwa Nihara of the Center for Social Concern, a social justice advocacy institution, blames the high maize prices on a lack of food security policies.
This bill was drafted by Department of Nutrition in collaboration with civil society organizations way back. But up to now, the bill hasn't been brought to Parliament to deliberate.
World Food Programme country representative Paul Tenbu says that Russia's invasion of Ukraine has contributed to the current food insecurity.
The war between Russia and Ukraine has hit global food security, and Malawi has not been spared. We remember that the fertilizer prices were already going up sharply in 2021, but in 2022 they doubled with the onset of the war. A large amount of the fertilizer that is traded globally comes from Russia and Ukraine.
An estimated 4.4 million Malawians are likely to face hunger in the 2023-2024 consumption period, making up 22% of the country's population. According to the August 2023 Malawi Vulnerability Assessment Committee report published by the government. Despite this, the government says it has yet to fill up the grain reserves to ease access to the staple grain for those in dire need of food assistance. Chimwe Barata, VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station.